From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Ghost in the Wires with convicted hacker Kevin Mitnick. Get ready for that. Well, here's what's happening. Well, you've heard it by now. The most powerful earthquake to strike the East Coast in 67 years shook buildings, rattled nerves from South Carolina to Maine, frightened office workers spilling into the streets in New York and parts of the White House, Capitol, the Pentagon. They were evacuated. No immediate reports of deaths or injuries, but fire officials said that they were still checking on that. The National Cathedral said that the central tower and three of its four corner spires were damaged, but the White House said advisors had told President Barack Obama no reports of major damage to the nation's infrastructure there, including airports, except the Washington Monument showed a crack right at the top. The U.S. Geological Survey said the quake registered a magnitude 5.8 and was centered 40 miles northwest of Richmond, Virginia. And the strong earthquake that rattled the eastern United States was highly unusual in its severity, though it was centered in a part of Virginia known for some smaller quakes. And a 5.3 magnitude earthquake, the biggest in the state of Colorado in some four decades, shook that state in an area of the United States where quakes there are very rare as well. Now, Robert Zimmerman is an award-winning space historian. So, Robert, what are you doing talking about earthquakes?
Well, I was sitting in it today, George. I'm sitting here working on my website, Behind the Black, and it sounds like some giant is walking across the roof of my house. And I say, what the heck is that? And things kind of settle down a second, and then it happens all over again. And it feels like the house is really shaking very badly. And I go out the front door, and people are coming out of all their doors. And it was clearly an earthquake. I quickly went to the USGS site and quickly posted on my website every update that I could get about this thing. It was very clear right from the start that it hadn't done much damage, practically any damage throughout the whole East United States. It mostly just startled people, especially since the East Coast is not familiar with this experience.
Well, that's right. See, on the West Coast, Bob, as you know, when an earthquake hits, they're sometimes big, but they're centered around the region that they hit in. Out there on the East Coast, they spread all over the place.
Yes. In fact, I had a post up describing the quake and the USGS information within 10 minutes, and over the next 20 minutes, I got like 40 quick comments from people spread out in Canada, in Georgia, Connecticut, Chicago, all across the eastern United States. They all felt it. In fact, some people who were very close to the epicenter felt it less than people farther away, which I thought was very interesting, at least the comments coming in. The irony to me is that I think the worst consequence of this is the lack of man hours, labor done in Washington, in government offices on the East Coast, because they were the ones that mostly evacuated. I had one friend who works in the Capitol, and he says, talk about people freaking out. The Hill is shut down big time.
If they didn't get paid today, we save some money, Bob.
They won't. They'll get paid. They'll always get paid.
Yeah.
I just went back to work. I had a comment from someone else says, oh, it was horrible. And what I kept thinking about is the Japan earthquake and Haiti earthquake. This wasn't horrible. This was interesting. It does raise the important point, though, about earthquakes on the eastern United States. Because of the nature of the geology, they do cover a very large territory. A large quake on the eastern United States will affect a very large area.
Absolutely.
And they do happen rarely.
And preparedness is way, way low. Thank you, Bob. Hurricane Irene has lost some of its punch and is now a Category 1 hurricane, but the storm remains likely to regain some strength and become a major hurricane. The National Hurricane Center said that Irene had maximum sustained winds of about 90 miles an hour. Updated projections had the storm moving farther east than before, but models still show that Irene could make landfall in North Carolina over the weekend. In a moment, meteorologist Mike Smith will talk about that and the earthquake that hit out there on the East Coast. Police are looking for a man who stabbed a pedestrian on Long Island after asking him for a dollar. The man refused, and then he was stabbed repeatedly in the stomach multiple times. He was taken to a local hospital in stable condition. Hours after rebel forces gained full control, they say, over Muammar Gaddafi's fortified compound in Libya's capital, the besieged dictator told the state TV that his withdrawal from the area was a tactical move. Of course, he also admitted that NATO leveled the compound with 64 airstrikes. Gaddafi has vowed death or victory in his fight against NATO aggression, he says. Craig Hewlett with us. Craig, where is the guy?
Well, you know, he's got a very elaborate network of intelligence people. So he could be just about anywhere. He may not even be near Tripoli. And he certainly doesn't have to be there to command his forces. His forces can more than take care of the tactical and strategic necessities that are in place. My problem with the whole thing is it does look like we're going to find him, we're going to kill him, we're going to get rid of him, the same way we did Saddam Hussein and his sons, what we did with bin Laden. And I'm just getting to the point where, you know, where is the American people about this? Where are we as citizens standing by and watching our country decide who the leaders are throughout the entire world, it looks like, and killing them?
Well, and why did we let 42 years go by to let this guy do whatever he was going to do?
Well, you know, originally there was a movement to get rid of him some time back in the late 70s and early 80s. The CIA backed the anti-Gaddafi Libyans. I got to know many of them. They moved to Seattle when they were forced into exile. First went to London. There was a shootout at the London embassy. And then they were forced to leave, and they ended up in Seattle. I became friends with a lot of them. But those are not the men that are making up the rebels that we're facing, or Gaddafi's facing at this time. And these rebels have also been responsible, these so-called rebels have been responsible for a kind of ethnic cleansing we've seen in other parts of the world, Rwanda and Bosnia, and yet we firmly back these people. It seems to me we're going to decide who's going to run the country, and I just can't believe there's any intent to install a full democracy. I just don't believe it anymore, and I don't believe the Democratic Party, to be frank with you, and I'm certainly no Republican, but I can't believe everybody's standing by and watching Obama do something that's actually making Bush look like less of a tyrant when he was in office.
And strangely enough, I bet President Obama's popularity goes up if they get Gaddafi.
Isn't that amazing? We don't even know where Libya is on a map. We have nothing to do with that country. Goldman Sachs runs their sovereign fund. Gulf Oil was in contract negotiations for the oil. And we know what the country is going to be turned over to. We do know this here in America. We're not a silly people. But I'm becoming more convinced we're a country without any kind of legitimate convictions. And we're fully lacking in any kind of honor. Because this is just, to me, horrendous. How many civilians we're killing to install a puppet regime, just like we're doing in Afghanistan. And what are we going to do next? Are we going to actually go into Syria next, Yemen, Somalia? What are we going to do, make over the entire world? And most of it doesn't even want democracy.
Well, you know Syria is next. Syria is next, Craig. I guarantee you it's on the list.
Well, it's stunning that the American people are standing by and allowing this when there's no declaration of war. There's no interest except oil and wealth, sovereign wealth, money that's in the banks. And there's no interest for the American people to gain anything except what? Another tour of duty for a bunch of beleaguered Rangers that are already on their ninth round of tours?
It's the old sleight of hand. You keep people baffled over the economy while you're doing other things.
Now, you would think that the economy would be the stimulus to say, stop fighting wars and do something about jobs here in America.
That's not happening. Craig, we're going to be in touch with you. I have a feeling if they find Gaddafi this week, we'll get you back on. Police in Tennessee were called to a funeral home where workers found two intruders in there, alive, sleeping inside the caskets. The employees at the Weaver's funeral home called police, and as soon as they did, the two men in the caskets woke up and got out of there fast. Up next, Mike Smith, hurricanes, earthquakes, tornadoes. What's next? He's on Coast to Coast AM. Fascinating hour in store for you. Mike Smith, one of the world's leading experts in the application of weather science. He's a meteorologist, entrepreneur, inventor. Mike works with some of North America's most important companies to save lives, property, and creates technology that warns the public of dangerous weather ahead. Mike's day job, Senior Vice President of AccuWeather Enterprise Solutions. And while I was kicking around St. Louis in my days, Mike was kicking around Channel 2 in St. Louis at the time. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Great, George. How are you?
Good to have you. You've been all over the map since the St. Louis days.
Yes, I have. What I did in 1981, 30 years ago this month, I started a company called Weather Data, and that company has grown and grown into the leading company in North America that provides very specific storm warnings to businesses. And 5 years ago, I sold the assets of Weather Data to AccuWeather, and that has been a very good professional marriage. And officially, on Wednesday, depending upon what time zone you're in,
that's
today,
right,
or tomorrow, we are changing the name from Weather Data to AccuWeather Enterprise Solutions.
Well, there you have it. And that's I remember AccuWeather from my TV days, Mike. They were everywhere, weren't they?
Yes, and AccuWeather.com is the most popular source of weather information on the web these days.
Mike, what's going on weather-wise? I mean, here we are, earthquakes. We've got Hurricane Irene, which is a Category 1. It's probably going to get bigger. Is this the time for the perfect storm?
Well, it may be as far as the East Coast is concerned if Irene turns to the north and stays on that path. Irene right now is strengthening. I believe based on the satellite pictures of the last 2 hours and the last report from the Hurricane Hunter aircraft that Irene is getting stronger and will probably be at least Category 2 by sunrise. Now, right now, it looks like it's going to hit North Carolina or the eastern banks of North Carolina, but then things get interesting. There is a low-pressure area forecast to move over the Great Lakes, and if it does, that could pull Irene right up the I-95 corridor rather than going out to sea, which would be the more typical progression of a hurricane. Now, if it goes up the I-95 corridor, it could cause widespread power failures and quite a bit of damage, including to New York City and Long Island. Now, this is still quite speculative because that's still 4.5 to 5 days away, and we're not that good at forecasting hurricane locations 4 or 5 days out. But it's definitely a threat to southern New England, New York, New Jersey, and so that area needs to keep an eye on the storm and be thinking about some low-cost mitigation measures. For example, I posted something on my blog the other day, and I got tremendous response. You can go to a store like a Radio Shack, and for $25, it's called an electrical inverter. You put it into your cigarette lighter in your car, and you can run any electrical appliance off of it, like a refrigerator or a radio or a TV, computer, whatever you need to run.
Huh.
And it's an extremely useful device that very few people know about. And if there is a major power failure, it's a lifesaver, like if you have medicine that has to stay cool or something like that. You can plug your refrigerator right into it, and you're talking about $25 there. Another thing that I posted on my blog that got quite a bit of response was, if there are power failures, know how to disconnect your automatic garage door opener.
That's right. There you have to do that.
That's right. There are a lot of people who don't know how to do it, and you can't get that garage door up if you have a dead opener. So that sort of thing is on my blog for people to be thinking about now. We don't want you to move out yet. There's no reason to evacuate unless you're on an island in North Carolina. There are a couple of those little islands they are evacuating as a precaution. But those are the types of things to be thinking about as the hurricane gets a little closer.
Don't you just pull the cord for the garage door opener and it just unsnaps it?
Most you are correct. You just pull the cord. But there are a few out there where you have to pull it and twist at the same time.
Ah.
And if you don't twist, you keep pulling the cord. I learned that the hard way. And nothing happens.
This earthquake that hit the East Coast, the biggest in 67 years, they're not used to it. Why are the earthquakes so different, Michael, on the East Coast as opposed to the West Coast? In the West Coast, they seem, I'm out here in California, when they hit, you can feel it in the region, but it's not really widespread. The East, well, it goes into all these states. How come?
You have the deep San Andreas Fault and other major faults in California and the West. And so the energy tends to be deeper in the Earth's crust, meaning more thousands of feet below the ground. And so the energy from the earthquake tends to be relatively concentrated along that fault line, whereas the faults tend to be closer to the surface in the east, and so it allows the energy from the earthquake to spread over a greater geographic area.
Is there anything unusual about the earthquake that hit today on the east? Anything strange? I mean, you know, I've been getting emails from people, Mike, that, you know, maybe they were digging underground bunkers. Who knows what? But anything unusual there?
What's unusual is that it took it this long. People tend to only think what's normal is what's occurred in their lifetime. But New York City has had major earthquakes in 1737, 1783, and 1884. And if the 1884 earthquake were to reoccur, you would have $10 billion of damage in New York City alone.
Oh, my God.
And then Boston had a major, even by California standards, a major earthquake way back in 1755. Now, if it's happened once, it will happen again. It's just a matter of time. And I've been talking with some friends in the last year or so, thinking about how calm it's been across the country earthquake-wise. I think Mother Nature may be trying to get us caught up a little bit.
You might be right. I mean, we're still waiting for the big one that people have been predicting for California now for years. I hope it doesn't come, but they keep talking about it. What do you think?
Oh, it will come. It's just a question of when. Unfortunately, we really don't have any skill at forecasting an earthquake before it occurs. People have looked at planet alignment, tides, animal cries, you know, animals getting stirred up before an earthquake. People have looked at all kinds of correlations, and so far we haven't been able to figure it out. So at this point, there's no way to forecast an earthquake before it occurs. Now, as you know, George, in California and bordering states, there is a very dense network of seismographs, which are earthquake measuring equipment, and they're able to give maybe a minute or two worth of warning, say in Sacramento, if there is a major earthquake in San Francisco, but that's only in the southwestern United States. That's the only place the seismographs are dense enough, and it might give you enough time to dash under your desk or if you're at work, or grab your kids and head out into the yard away from any buildings that might collapse.
One of our guests, Mike, geologist Jim Berkland, looks at several things. He looks at new moons, full moons, and also, as you just mentioned, animal disappearances. And he believes that that combination is a big one for an earthquake. Predicted, apparently, the Oakland Bay, San Francisco earthquake back some time ago.
And the Chinese have published papers about it, but so far, at least as far as I know, people have not been able to replicate the technique. Now, I'm not saying it won't work, but so far we haven't figured out the right combination of things to make an accurate forecast. I'm hoping we will be able to, because if you could give people even 5 to 10 minutes, they could get out from under hazardous locations. And so the death toll would be kept down.
You would think with the kind of technology we have on the planet now, Mike, that we would be able to pinpoint something, you know, have some kind of probes that are down a few miles that pick up some kind of reading or anything. Don't we have things like that?
Oh, yes. The geological community is very active at putting probes in, taking a look at stresses along faults. But remember, hurricanes happen several times a year out in the Atlantic,
right,
and more often than that in the Pacific. Tornadoes in the United States happen maybe 1,000 times a year. There are about 1,000 tornadoes. But big earthquakes are relatively rare. Now, of course, we've had the big quake in Japan earlier this year, and we had a big earthquake in Chile the year before, and then before that, one in New Zealand.
Hold on right there, Mike. We're going to come back. We'll talk more about earthquakes, and we'll take some phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we're going to talk with Kevin Mitnick, one of the world's most wanted hackers at the time. He'll explain why he did it and what you can do about it. And when we come back with Mike Smith, we'll take your phone calls as we talk about this weird weather on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We're with meteorologist Mike Smith. We're going to take your phone calls. Mike, we were talking about how some areas are overdue for earthquakes. Are they like pressure in pressure cookers that if you don't let the steam out, they're going to go?
That's an excellent analogy, yes. The pressure builds up on, for example, the San Andreas Fault or any other fault line, and eventually the pressure becomes so great there's a major slip, and that's what creates the earthquake. And so sometimes the pressure is released gradually, but when you get a lot of pressure building up and it releases suddenly, that's when you can have a devastating earthquake.
And once it goes, and then it starts all over again, and it's just that process?
It's kind of like ringing a bell. In fact,
yeah.
They've already had the first aftershock with the Virginia quake this afternoon. It wasn't as bad, and rarely are aftershocks as bad as the first quake, but they'll probably have a few more aftershocks in the east, and that's typical of any earthquake.
All right, let's go to some of the phone calls west of the Rockies. Ed is in Los Angeles. You're up with us. Hey, Ed, go ahead.
Okay, thanks a lot, George.
Sure.
I wanted to ask both of you a question. Both of you are very intuitive. Do you think that we are involved in a weather war? China and Russia definitely have these weapons. Last 24 hours, you had an earthquake that struck Colorado. Hasn't been one there in 40 years. And then you get this earthquake that strikes the East Coast that rattles everybody in Washington, D.C., and evacuates them. And it's interesting that it coincides with the situation with Syria and Assad and Gaddafi in Libya. And the reason why I'm asking you that, a year ago I had a vision that an earthquake was going to strike off the coast, East Coast of the United States. A tidal wave was going to come in, and Yale University was going to be struck. The second part of the vision, I saw in the rotunda of the Capitol a coffin with an entity in the coffin that was the major leader of the United States. And I'm wondering if all of this is correlated, and are we in a very dangerous, dangerous situation?
What do you think of weather manipulation and control, Mike? You know, we've had a lot of guests on this program that believe that they may be able to cause earthquakes and hurricanes and rough weather. You're a straight meteorologist. What do you think?
I'm a straight meteorologist, and I don't know of any way it can be done because the amounts of energy are so great. Let me give you one example. A supercell thunderstorm of the type that could create a major tornado, like the one that hit Joplin or the one that hit our old stomping grounds in St. Louis,
mm-hmm.
produces about as much energy as the Nagasaki atomic bomb every minute and a half.
Wow.
Now think about that. That's every minute and a half. And so in order to steer a hurricane, you would have to create much more energy than many, many atomic bombs, and you'd have to sustain that energy for hours and hours. And so much energy would have to be created, it would be virtually impossible to escape detection. In other words, you'd have to be setting off these atomic bombs or other types of direct intervention by, like I say, fighting energy with energy. And, you know, often when there's a major tornado like the one that hit Joplin, people will say it looked like an atomic bomb went off.
Yeah.
Well, the reason they say that is because the amount of energy is about the same.
Mm-hmm. Now, we do know they seed clouds.
Yes, they do. The areas where that is modestly successful are in mountains. There has not been much success at cloud seeding in the flatlands, maybe a little bit in terms of diminishing the amount of hail, meaning fewer hailstones or smaller hailstones. And in the Sierra in California, they get an additional 5 to 15% of rain or snow over what would have fallen anyway, but that's a very modest change in the weather. It's certainly nothing that could steer a storm hundreds of miles in a different direction or create or dissipate a storm the size of a hurricane.
Next up, we go to Manhattan, New York. Christine, did you feel that little rumble today?
Oh, yeah. It was a brief, more like a gentle rolling, no noise. We had one 20 years ago, about 7 in the morning, and that sounded like a few trucks going by.
Yeah.
But this was noiseless.
Glad you're okay.
Yeah, thanks. Yesterday, I went down to one of our beaches near Coney Island, and I noticed something that was extremely bizarre. It you know, kind of even struck me as being indicative of something. I didn't know what. It was yesterday around 4 to 7. The water was absolutely calm. There was no waves whatsoever. I mean, looking at it, it just looked like a calm lake instead of an ocean. And I, you know, thought of what they had said about the Asian earthquake tsunami, you know, and how the bay seemed calm and receded. So, and then there is actually, Tesla invented an earthquake machine over 100 years ago, and you can buy a book called The Tesla Earthquake Machine that has the supposed blueprints on how to build your own. So I'm kind of with that earlier caller, you know, who suspects some sort of economic warfare being played out, you know, with the Chilean earthquake, the Haitian one, you know, it all kind of, you know, makes me, the Japanese one, this one being so close and affecting Washington, you know, it makes me wonder.
The calm before the storm. You never know. Mike, what has been causing the weather to be so disruptive lately?
Well, it's two things, George. We've had a really tough year weather-wise and earthquake-wise around the world and here in the United States. My friend Jenna Blum, who is a best-selling author, coined the term Metronado to talk about the tornadoes that have hit big cities this year, like Raleigh, Minneapolis, Jackson, Birmingham, and even Springfield, Massachusetts, far outside of Tornado Alley. Now, that's not unheard of. There was a major tornado in Worcester, Massachusetts in 1953, but because by coincidence, the tornadoes have hit big cities. You've had a lot more damage and many more deaths than are typical. We've had the tsunami and earthquake in Japan that have done so much damage. And then, as the caller mentioned, the earthquakes in New Zealand and in Chile. But I did want to comment about an earthquake machine. Think about this. In order to create an earthquake in all of these places, you would have to pick up the machine or install the machine in all these different countries. And that would require people, it would require trucks, it would require materials, it would require airplanes or boats to get across the ocean. I think if someone were doing that, it would be detected.
Okay, whose turn? It's Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Hey, Hugh, it's your turn. Hey, welcome to the show.
Yes, good evening. Thank you so much for sure. being a guest, Mr. Smith. In 1906 on the West Coast, after that particular earthquake, a tri-anchor system developed which prevents any violent earthquakes, perhaps beyond a 6.4. But there's such a thing in energy known as an interface offset effect on the East Coast. If it can't happen or if it's impossible to happen on the West Coast, in all likelihood, it'll happen on the East Coast. So you could be looking at anything from a 6 range all the way up to, you know, an 8 or a 9. But my question would be, I attend a lot of meetings, political meetings, and there over the past couple of weeks there have been some military officials who have been talking about meteorological state-of-the-art and advanced. I can't go into that in detail on the air because I don't have the authority. But they're talking about, like you just did, about enormous atomic-like or nuclear-like force in these storms. Number one, is it possible for this hurricane, Irene, to build in strength and to be attracted to the target zone laid out by the earthquake. That might happen in nature. And also, if you look at the cathedral towers, three of the four came down or were damaged. We were getting information at these meetings that television towers, both UHF and VHF, are the target of experiment in meteorology, and that the enormous collateral force required to reverse a tower so that it's pointing downward toward the Earth's mantle instead of the Earth's sky. Could you comment on the possible nuclear equivalent force if this kind of collateral damage is possible with Irene or any succeeding hurricanes? Thank you, sir.
All right.
Sure. The computer models, and let's face it, those aren't human beings. They're not influenced by what we might want or think would happen. They're pretty objective. They were forecasting an extended path on up toward New York City even before the earthquake occurred. In fact, if you go back to the 11 a.m. advisory from the National Hurricane Center just 12, 13 hours ago, you see the path on up toward New York City and to the east of Washington, D.C. Well, the earthquake occurred, and the computer models are keeping the storm Irene on the same path. So far, there's no evidence that the earthquake or the hurricane might be influencing each other. Now, having said that, there are a number of people, reputable people, who do think there is a correlation between earthquakes and major storms and also phases of the moon and that sort of thing. The problem is, at least as far as I can see, no one's been able to put it together in a way that it can create reliable predictions. I think it's something we want to continue to look at and continue to research, but I doubt there would be any attraction by the earthquake of Irene.
Next up, we go to Chicago. It's Jonah's turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Jonah, go ahead.
Hi, George and Mike. Thanks for the call.
Sure.
To bring you back home a little bit to St. Louis, my question is about the San Madrid fault line. Is the San Madrid fault line equally or more dangerous than the San Andreas fault line as far as the depth of it? And how has it been since that fault line that we hear so much about has really gave way?
The New Madrid fault line in southeastern Missouri is very dangerous, and here's why. It is capable of producing an earthquake in the 8 to 8.5 magnitude. And just like what we saw with the Virginia quake today, the earthquake waves through the Earth's crust will travel great distances. Now, in California, you have building codes that provide some measure of protection for a major quake. And even in New York City, after 1995, new buildings actually have to have some minimal earthquake protection. But that's not true in St. Louis, in Memphis, in, say, Kansas City, Columbia, Missouri, Springfield, Illinois. Those cities have no earthquake protection of any significance in their building codes.
What about the Arch, Mike? Could the Arch sustain a big earthquake?
I don't think it could. I'm not saying it would fall, but I'm saying it might be so damaged it would have to be torn down.
God, how'd you like to be up there when that happens?
That thought has occurred to me in the past, George, and no thank you.
No, a lot of people might not know that you can go to the top of the St. Louis Arch in a little tiny kind of elevator that kind of clicks its way up to the top. And when you're there, it sways when you look out the little porthole windows. And
it's triangular
with the flat
side on the top. And so you're looking straight down.
Were you in St. Louis? Were you at Channel 2 at the time when that guy landed on the top of the arch via parachute? And then
yes, I was.
And the wind caught him, and he slid down the leg, and he was killed.
Yes, yeah. Yes. People have tried to hang glide through the arch sort of and treat it like a croquet wicket and all of that sort of thing. It's very dangerous, as that poor gentleman found out.
Let's go to Judy in Columbus, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Hey, Judy, take it away.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen.
Hey.
Mike, I would like to ask you if you will please comment on the earthquake that occurred early yesterday morning, I guess it was, in Colorado.
Now, you talked a little bit about that, Mike, but go ahead.
That particular earthquake was very unusual. It's been roughly 5 decades since they've had an earthquake of that strength in Colorado. And it's hard for people to imagine, but when you hear these numbers like the Richter scale, it's a logarithmic scale. Now, I hate to throw out that term, but the reason the East Coast earthquake was felt over a much larger area is because it was 2,800 times more powerful than the one in Colorado. I have a good friend in Grand Junction, which isn't all that far away from the area south or north of Trinidad where the earthquake in Colorado was centered. He didn't feel it at all. And I have other friends in Denver, and they say they maybe felt it, whereas the much stronger quake in the east was felt over a much larger geographic area.
Mike, we've got time for one or two more calls. Dino, first-time caller in Bridgeview, Illinois. Dino, go ahead.
Yes, I got a question and a story, a short story. Anyways, the short story is I was living in California in '71, and I had a short-haired German pointer, which is a hunting dog to begin with, and at 6 o'clock, he was yiping back and forth. He's walking back and forth, and I thought he had to go out and go to the washroom. He couldn't hold it, so I put my pants on, walked outside the door, and all of a sudden, the earthquake hits at 6:05.
Jeez.
And it was a funny story because I was right next to the pool. And I think he saved my life because if it would have cracked, because it was a pretty good one, it was 6 or 6.9 or something like in a Richter scale.
That's a good size.
And I thought I was going to drown in my apartment because I was lowered in the pool, you know. But anyways, the question is that I believe that if you got your highs and your lows, okay, and you got your cold weather up north, when a tornado comes in, okay, that it sort of it causes from the cell phone towers, the electricity and the radiation from cell phone towers makes it stronger. Do you believe that?
There's no evidence that is the case. I'm not sure it's ever been researched. Now, sometimes people do see unusual electricity around tornadoes. In fact, it used to be called St. Elmo's Fire. And I remember when I was in Oklahoma City, before I went to St. Louis, we could sometimes see the electricity as a thunderstorm moved in, zipping right up our transmitter tower. So there are electrical effects that occur with large towers, often around tornadoes, but I don't think they have any real influence on the tornado. I think it's the tornado that's helping generate the unusual electrical currents that we sometimes see with the towers.
All right, Mike, thank you so much. Good luck. Let's hope that nothing else happens over the next couple of weeks. Mike Smith's website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com for you, mikesmithenterprises.com, and again, it's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. When we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM, we're going to be talking about Ghost in the Wires, My Adventures as the World's Most Wanted Hacker. It's the story of Kevin Mitnick. Now, you know, Kevin's been on the program before. We turned to him during breaking computer-type issues. This time, he's the main guest talking about himself. We'll be back.